The sky was blue and high above, the moon was new and so was love. This eager heart of mine was singing, lover, where can you be? You came at last, love had its day, that day is past, you've gone away. This sinking heart of mine is singing, lover, come back to me.
Cassandra Wilson, the award-winning jazz singer, is known as much for her soulful and sultry voice as for her willingness to cross musical boundaries. In her latest album, Loverly, Ms. Wilson has reconceptualized a group of standards, her first full album of standards since 1988. Loverly, which Ms. Wilson also produced, is the seventh album she's recorded for Blue Note Records, and it'll be in the stores on June 10th. I'm pleased that it has brought her here, along with a couple of live performances that I'll tell you about later. And it's a pleasure to see you.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Your last album of standards was Blue Skies 30 years ago.
I think that's 20.
20 years ago, yeah. Right. Well, gee, I made you older than you are. But anyway, that just proves how bad my math is. When did you decide to revisit some of these old standards? I'm sure you've been singing some of them all along in live performances.
Well, actually, no, I haven't. I haven't really been performing standards in live performance. And I miss them. I miss doing them. It's great to return to the standard repertoire. And it was time. It's, you know, been 20 years since I've done that material, and it's always great to go back.
Well, you don't just go back. I mean, jazz also requires that you personalize it, make it something different, make it something your own. And that also is something that you do with the musicians you perform with. It's kind of like a dialogue, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And you're right. When you're going back, you're actually going forward at the same time. You know, you're revisiting material that, of course, has been interpreted by many great artists. So you have to try to find a way to make it fresh for yourself and the musicians, and also to give the audience a little something extra to think about.
So what? Why do you decide one song rather than another? Because you feel you can connect to it? Because you feel you can do something personal to it?
Yeah, that's really the criteria, I think, for any song that you do, but especially with standards, you want to be careful, you know, because you can't just go in and do a standard and not make a connection with it, because usually, you know, someone has a very powerful idea of what that standard is, and, you know, they have the memory of who sang that standard. So you have to bring your own story.
And it's especially scary if Billie Holiday or Ella Fitzgerald or Dinah Washington recorded the song.
Absolutely.
Because then you're competing against your own heroes, in effect. This sounds very different than your last album, Thunderbird. So do you completely change the way you think about approaching the music?
Mm-hmm. Well, each project is different. I think I have some basic approaches. You know, there's basic character traits that I have and feelings that I have about music that always remain the same, but each project is different, so it demands a different approach.
There's only one song that I'm unfamiliar with. It's called Areri.
Yes.
Is this a standard, or because it has an African-sounding name to it?
It is a standard in the Yoruba culture. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a standard for some people.
But that's not the American songbook.
Oh, no, no, not yet, but it could be. The people in Cuba sing it. You find it with people who have the Yoruba culture. In Brazil, you find the song. It's a praise song to the god of iron, the deity of iron, and his name is Ogun. Ogun.
It's kind of God's spirit thing. And in Cuba, in Afro-Cuban cultures, they kind of merge Christianity with African-European culture. Mm-hmm. I don't know whether that affects the way you approach it, because, you grew up in in a Christian family.
Yeah, actually Presbyterian. So that makes it even more interesting, or not quite as interesting. The syncretism is there for the Cubans for a reason, and it also, I think, exists to a certain extent in African-American motifs. Mm-hmm. You'll find that. But for this purpose, for this music, I just didn't really think about any kind of relationship with Christianity. I thought more about who I was and before I, you know, pre-Christian concepts of what the music is.
Did the fact that you were doing standards determine the sidemen you put on this album?
Well,
because it's an all-star band. I mean, Jason Moran on piano, you have Lonnie Plaxico and Reginald Veal on different tracks playing bass. You have Marvin Sewell on guitar, Herlin Riley, uh-huh. one of the greatest drummers alive. I'm sure you played with them all before, but is that important that you know what they're capable of and what they might give you?
Yeah, of course. And there are a lot of musicians that I love, and it's a long list to choose from. But those musicians are very close to me. I've known them for a long time. I've known Lonnie for over 20 years. You know, I think maybe 25 years. Marvin Sewell's been in my band for over 10 years. And Reginald Veal is in the band now. Herlin Riley is in the band now. And Jason Moran is just my favorite pianist.
But you recorded this rather unconventionally, didn't you? The old days you would have gone into a studio in New York or Los Angeles. You did this in a house that you rented in Jackson, Mississippi?
Yeah, sure. Yeah,
well, because the new technology allows you to do that?
Yeah, but, you know, oddly enough, I took a low-tech approach to it. It's still done on tape, you know, which for some people is like 8-track.
Really?
Know? Sure. The idea of using...
You did analog here because you like the sound better?
I think analog does something that digital is approaching, but it can't quite do yet. And that is, analog captures so much of the room. Tape tends to capture more, I find, and you can feel it. You may not be able to describe what it is you're feeling, but I think that that actually happens and it affects people.
Some people say it puts air into the sound, mm-hmm. and that sometimes digital sounds a little airless. It sounds almost too perfect.
Yes, exactly.
Was it also important to you to be recording in your home state?
Yeah, I love going home. I love the vibration of it. I love being close to friends, and I love there's a certain kind of ease that you have when you're at home, of course.
Well, the last album you did in Mississippi was Belly of the Sun, but that was inspired by Mississippi Delta.
Mm-hmm.
Loverly is much more Broadway.
Mm-hmm. It is. It is, but it's Broadway done our way, way down south.
Well, you do have two traditional blues included on the album, St. James Infirmary, which I usually associate with Louis Armstrong. And Dust My Broom, I don't know whether you were thinking Robert Johnson or Elmore James, but they both did famous versions.
Yeah, I was thinking about both of them, actually. You know, there's a classic intro that Elmore James has that, ding-a-ding-a-ding-a-ding-a-ding-ding. And of course, that's
which has been stolen by every rock and roll group since.
Yeah, it has.
Well, Stephen Holden of the New York Times wrote recently that your style, if it can be defined at all, might be described as an internationally savvy deep blues.
Hmm, I like that.
You do? Yeah. I was wondering if you would.
I like that.
The Belly of the Sun is probably the album that put you on the map, don't you think?
Oh.
It's something that more than just, although I shouldn't say more than just a jazz artist, but somebody who might appeal to people who are outside of the jazz world.
That's interesting. I don't know which album did that for me. I don't know if it was New Moon Daughter. Certainly, Blue Light Till Dawn was the beginning of it, so I can't really pinpoint which album announced me to the world.
Well, you've been recording for a long time and doing a wide range of things. Is it important for you to not be pigeonholed?
Well, I don't really think about it. You know, if you feel comfortable doing that, then by all means, do it. I personally don't do it. I don't pigeonhole people or music.
Well, I was thinking about your career, because even though jazz has historically been your focus, you began your career in Mississippi and in Arkansas performing folk music,
yeah,
didn't you?
Sure.
So was jazz something that you wanted to get into, or is it something that you learned as you were going along?
Well, I was born into a household where there was a lot of music.
Your father was a jazz guitarist.
Yes, he was a jazz guitarist, a jazz bassist. So a lot of that was just, you know, by osmosis, by being in a home filled with this music and also filled with a lot of other different kinds of genres.
And then your father actually contributed to one of your albums.
Yeah, he did. He did. He played on She Who Weeps, and that was a JMT recording. And he played on Jairus's Blues.
That was before you switched over to Blue Note.
Yeah, that was, I think, a couple of projects before I made the switch.
You went to Jackson State to study communications.
Mm-hmm.
You weren't thinking of becoming a singer at that time?
Well, you know, I always had the music and was not worried about losing it, you know, because that was always a constant. But I was encouraged by my parents, of course, to, you know, have something else, you know, just to be certain, have that something else, just in case things don't work out. So I've always been fascinated with film and with television. So that was a natural for me, mass communications.
Have you ever been able to or needed to draw upon that education?
Well, actually, my first real job was in New Orleans, and it was at a television station at WDSU mm-hmm. in New Orleans. So,
not singing?
No, I actually had a job doing something else.
My guest is Cassandra Wilson, who has a new album out on Blue Note called Loverly Standards, a wide range of standards. She will also be doing a number of performances in the near future. On June 7th at 8 p.m., she'll be at the Harvey Theater at the Brooklyn Academy of Music on Fulton Street. And then on the 9th, is it, you'll be at the Blue Note, The record label is a Blue Note. There's no connection between that and the club in Greenwich Village. June 9th, 8 and 10:30 sets.
Yes.
One night only again. Why one night only? Don't most people, at least when they're at a club, try to do the whole week?
And I usually do a whole week at the Blue Note when I'm performing there. But I think because we've just done the BAM concert, which is going to be a really large venue, then we just do the release. It's more of a release party. I don't look at it as a gig or as a date. It's, you know, an opportunity for people to come down and just hang out and have some fun.
And that's the official release date of the album,
yeah,
as well.
Yeah.
What Loverly is something that you have a lot of fun with. You actually put on a hint of a Cockney accent at one point, which suggests to me that there's a certain amount of actress in you as well. Mm-hmm. And you began, weren't you, when you were very young, weren't you in The Wizard of Oz?
Yeah. I played Dorothy in The Wizard of Oz.
Do you think that singing is a form of acting?
Oh, sure. Yeah. I think you have to have a knowledge of that art, of taking on other personalities or, you know, method acting. Is definitely, you know, what I think about when I sing is drawing upon an experience and using that experience to interpret the song.
Well, you've also been in some films. You were a featured singer in the comedy Junior with the Governator of
mm-hmm.
California.
Yeah, that's fun.
You were in The Score with Marlon Brando and Robert De Niro. That must have been scary, being with two of the most heavyweight actors of our time.
Well, I didn't get a chance to meet Marlon Brando because, you know, the film process is, you know, everything is out of sequence, so you don't necessarily meet everybody that's in the movie. But I did meet Robert De Niro, and it's great. It's great meeting him.
Is it different singing before a camera?
Very much so. I found it, it can be very frustrating because it's, you're not connecting directly with an audience that's there. There are people there as a part of the set, and they're, you know, a quote-unquote audience, but the cameras are kind of invasive at times, and so you have to really tune them out and imagine.
Because you don't want to be distracted. But right. there are three different ways you could perform in front of an audience, mm-hmm. In a recording studio and on film. And I'm sure film is closer to the recording studio, with extra distractions. A lot of jazz players tell me that they prefer recordings of live performances, even if there are mistakes.
Yeah.
That sometimes the studio recording is too perfect, and it undermines that whole sense of what jazz is all about.
I feel that way, and that's one of the reasons I love recording in this way. It's more or less a live session. I like to keep the mistakes in because it means that it has vitality and it's like life. It is life. It's a picture of life. It's a piece of life.
Although you don't make many mistakes.
Oh, I make lots of mistakes. I still make lots of mistakes, and that's a sign that you're trying to do something. You know, if you don't have the mistakes, that means that you're taking the safe road, mm-hmm. that you're not trying anything different that's going to stretch you. So, you know, the mistakes are an important part of growth and development as an artist.
In some ways, isn't it harder to be a jazz singer than play an instrument? Because if you're blowing a saxophone, you know if you put your fingers on certain keys and your reed is put in correctly, you're going to play in tune.
Yeah.
But if you're reaching for something and it comes out wrong, it could be very embarrassing, can't it?
Especially
if you're doing improvising on the chord changes and you don't know where the heck you are in the song.
Yeah. Well, that's where the art of it comes in. You either have to have your bearings enough where you can make what is wrong right. You know, sometimes you're able to do that. But then that takes a while to get to it. It takes a while to get to that level of mastery. So sometimes you are, like, nowhere near the right chord. You know, you sing a note that just has nothing whatsoever to do with the context. And you have to laugh it off or just move. Someone once told me, if you're thinking about what you sang, you're not thinking, you know, you're not thinking forward. You're not thinking about what's to come.
I have the same rule when I'm doing a show. If sometimes I say really stupid things or I make mistakes, and I just forgive myself because the alternative is for me to dwell on it, and then I can't do anything after that.
Right. It becomes self-fulfilling and self. You know, it just doesn't work.
You also have made a concert film, Traveling Miles, Cassandra Wilson, a tribute to Miles Davis?
Yeah.
Now, he's a guy who sometimes made mistakes. It didn't matter. It was always Miles. It was always great.
I love Miles's mistakes. There are lots of squeaks that he has, you know, that are, and you can almost feel the emotion in them, you know. And sometimes I wonder if they're done on purpose, but I don't think they are. I think it happens because that's life. And he's brilliant. It's brilliant.
You have just recorded Standards again, and you're going to be touring with this album, in effect, probably singing standards that aren't on the album as well.
Well, I don't really sing a lot of standards. So for the most part, when people think about the standard repertoire, they think about Broadway. Mm-hmm. That has not really been a part of my repertoire.
I'm talking about now with this album.
Well, now with this album I will do, but they're going to be mostly coming from this album. There aren't a lot of other standards that I do.
And then after this is all over, you go back to the sort of thing you've been doing, original material.
I have no idea. I can't predict that.
But meanwhile, we can't predict that you'll be at Harvey at BAM on the 7th at 8 p.m. And then at 8 and 10:30 on the 9th, you'll be at the Blue Note. And the album just came out. It's called Loverly. Let's listen to something else from it. Thank you so much, Cassandra Wilson.
Thank you.
All I want is a room somewhere, far away from the cold night air, with one
an enormous chair. Oh, wouldn't that be lovely? Lots of chocolate for me to eat. Lots of cold burning, lots of heat. Warm face, warm hands, warm feet. Oh, wouldn't that be lovely?